Welcome to Revealing Men, conversations that pull back the curtain, revealing the inner lives of men. I'm Randy Flood, psychotherapist and director of the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan. Today I have Al Haystack, who is the principal therapist of our Transformations Toward a Healthy Sexuality program. Al provides individual and group counseling for men who struggle with sex or pornography addiction, or men simply just struggling with, in some fashion, with their sexual behaviors or sexual life. So, Al, thanks for coming.
Good to be here.
All right. It's nice to start off with just, you know, we're a men's resource center that provides specialized services for men. And so we see men as a special population. What makes you passionate, you think, about working with men?
Well, my own experience of growing up with unnamed pain and difficulties and the isolation of all of that, and the liberation and the connection and the sort of sense of community and new purpose that can happen when we finally kind of wake up and find out that we're connected, we're more alike than we're different. And so that sense of connection and the courage it takes to take a look at oneself.
So the meaning of having more intentional conversations beyond just baseball and stuff like that guys will do that with you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Good deal.
Yeah.
So you run this program where you have men that come in struggling with porn addiction or sexual addiction. And some people might think that these guys, addiction, what do you mean? This is just men behaving badly, or this is just immoral behavior. So I'm wondering what you would say to that.
Well, a lot of people understand that it's possible to go out on a Friday night and drink a few too many beers and maybe get a little inappropriate or a little silly or do something foolish or maybe even get into a little bit of trouble. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm an alcoholic. So there's a lot of behaviors out there. And what happens when it kind of like goes too far? You know, where is that line? And most people know quite a bit about people who struggle with alcohol. Mm-hmm. That's kind of out there. It's pretty common. Everybody's got a cousin, an uncle, somebody that, you know, that you wonder, do they have a problem with alcohol? They drink too much? You know, do I drink too much?
Right. Didn't they think that was immoral behavior back in the 40s, though?
Well, yeah, the stigma about alcohol is that's certainly changed.
Right.
This is a problem with sexual acting out and sexual addiction that's really more in the shadows and there's more stigma and people aren't talking about it as much. But I think it is helpful to sort of understand something about the difference between, hey, I drank too much one night and having a pattern where I'm drinking too much even when I am not planning on drinking too much. So a sense of loss of control that begins to happen and a kind of powerlessness that can accompany that.
And that happens, your sex addiction, you know, with alcohol, you're actually consuming something that's mood altering.
Right.
So then people who would say sex addiction is not a true addiction, you're not consuming anything. You're not drinking anything. You're not putting anything in your butt. So what's so addictive about it? Just stop looking.
Yeah. Well, actually, you are consuming something. You're not.
Say more about that.
You're not ingesting literally a substance like you would with an opiate or cocaine or, but you are taking in imagery like when you're looking at porn, and that is, we know the data is really clear that that's a mood altering process. And the American Society of Addiction Medicine, medical docs have determined that addiction is a brain disease that has to do with memory systems and reward pathways and motivation. And that the same dynamic that happens with cocaine or alcohol or opiates also happens with mood altering with sex. So we know that there's a parallel there. There's this very similar thing.
So what I've heard is that sex addiction is a more of a process addiction, similar to gambling. So it's something you're doing, seeing, experiencing, that's creating some kind of change and releasing chemicals in your brain.
Right.
That's what the brain gets addicted to. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And most people understand what it's like with certain foods. A bag of Doritos becomes much more difficult to restrain oneself about, because there's something about Doritos, the sugars, fats, and salts, that kind of lights up the brain. I mean, we know that the science says that's
different than green beans. Huh?
That's different from eating broccoli. Right.
Right. Okay. So some still may not be believers, but our experience, especially working with men, and you and I both have worked with several men who've come into the center, and what we see is a parallel to a lot of people who struggle with alcoholism or some other type of drug addiction, is the consequences is in.
Yes.
And we see that happening with men come in, and they're experiencing a lot of pain and suffering from the consequences from their acting out, and that oftentimes motivates them to do something.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm wondering what categories do you end up seeing the consequences show up in? What do you see?
Well, one of the places that it shows up is in relationships with intimate partners, family members, especially intimate partners. It's a lot of men come here because their partner is saying, "Hey, you've got an issue, you got a problem," and sometimes they're really relieved to be able to finally say, "You know what? She's right. This is out of control. This isn't making me happy. I'm not really free. I'm locked up with this." And there also can be legal consequences. So sometimes guys get into, they get caught seeing an escort, or, they have an indecent exposure, or they have some sexual related situation. They are looking at images online, and they get into something that's unlawful, underage. And then, I mean, what we see is that there are many sexual related consequences legally that are really related to an addictive process.
Right.
And we know that sometimes there isn't necessarily an addiction going on, and that some people can be out doing other sort of sexual offending sort of behaviors. Right. But a lot of what we see has to do with an addictive process that morphs into these other behaviors.
Yeah, and I've seen men have it show up at work, and you've remember some of the guys that have lost jobs because they've, got busted looking at pornography and wasting a lot of time, a lack of productivity. And so it shows up with these consequences. And then that oftentimes can become the incentive to get help. But just merely getting rid of consequences is not that's the beginning of treatment, perhaps, that motivates sobriety. But there's a lot of underlying shame with this, and I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how you address and how maybe group can help with that plug of shame.
Yeah, that is really one of the serious consequences that most people don't readily see with something like this. It's kind of like, oh, well, this must be kind of a really fun life that you've had doing all this sort of acting out. I mean, the sense of failure, the sense of guilt, the real guilt that I've hurt somebody that I care about, I've violated values within myself. But this deep sense that there's really something wrong with me. I'm really, I'm a bad person.
Right.
And that's where the recovery idea that a lot of the shame that comes with this loss of control can be lessened when men begin to see that, yes, they made a choice to do certain behavior, much like somebody makes a choice to go into Lake Michigan when the yellow flags or the red flags are up. But you don't make a choice to get pulled out by a rip current. So men make choices to do certain things, look at porn, see escorts, do these kind of things. But I've never met a man who made a choice to lose control over this behavior. Mm. That does not mean that men aren't accountable and responsible for this. But the shame issue,
right,
when men began to see that, okay, I made a choice to get involved with some things, but I didn't really make a choice to lose control. And this is something that happened to me, and I need to take responsibility and make a choice to work on recovery.
Right. Yeah. And that that helps them experience the treatment of shame, as I understand it, is it's kind of like a fungi or a moss that grows in the dark. And yeah. So this isolation is what causes the shame to continue to get larger and larger, which can then, you can self-medicate with more use, more porn, right, and that cycle of addiction happens. And so the exposure, the getting it into the light is that experience of talking to a therapist or talking to a minister, or talking to a friend, and even more powerfully is talking to other men,
yeah,
who are struggling. And it's like that's nourishing and cleansing to that shame.
Yeah, there is something about that which seems very counterintuitive to men. It's like, no, I feel terrible about this. How possibly can it help me to embarrass myself by talking about it in front of others?
This is going to make it worse.
It's like, that's a major league anathema, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, but the reality is that when men begin to see that they're more like other men who are struggling with this than they are different, it is powerfully shame reducing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So the other thing I've heard is this thing about sex addiction at its core being an intimacy disorder. And so I wonder how that gets addressed, or do men actually experience a lack of intimacy in their lives, which then, you know, what's the chicken and egg, and how does that lead to using imagery to solve that rather than actually right. solve it by trying to figure out how to develop intimacy skills?
Right, right. So when I first started here at Men's Resource Center, I remember a conversation that you and I had about how men connected and how so many of us as men connected shoulder to shoulder on a bus, on a way to a football game or a track meet, side by side, but not very much face to face, and really opening up to, hey, you know, how's life really going for you? You know, how are right. you feeling? Right. And we just know that these are not conversations that men and boys are taught to have so easily. And the process of becoming sexually addicted, that further isolates one from themselves and other people.
Right.
So the experience of being in a group, not only talking about the experience of their struggle, but just the sheer experience of closeness, which is really
right.
what intimacy is. And having that experience with other men in a very non-sexual way, in a very therapeutic way,
right.
can begin to make a bridge for right. guys to see.
Well, I think when I think of Noah B. Way's work with studying young boys, in a longitudinal studies, she follows them and she talks about middle schools where they stop talking about their lives and start playing together more shoulder to shoulder. And then that's the age they turn, move into puberty, and then all of a sudden are seen and encouraged to have conquests and go start chasing women. And so men oftentimes conflate, the socialization process causes them to conflate, you know, or equate sexuality with intimacy. I lose intimacy with myself, cutting myself off with my own emotions. I lose intimacy with the young men in my life. And now I got to go find it. And they chase women to, and there's something in our culture that teaches that pathway for intimacy is sex.
Right.
And so I wonder how that gets deconstructed in group and challenged in terms of their belief systems around sex and the relationship of sex and intimacy and that.
Yeah, it really is a conundrum of how much intimacy can get equated with being sexual. And so
it can be a celebration of intimacy achieved in intimate sexuality. Is that right? You experience spiritual, emotional intimacy and connection, and the sex is supposed to be a way of kind of.
Right.
But this is false intimacy. Is a kind of puts it the other way around.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in a lot of ways it speaks to the isolation and loss of connection that boys and so often boys and men grow up with. Connection has to do with achievement. It has to do with work. It has to do with doing things and fixing things and problem solving and being in our heads and not much emotional connection. So, you know, we don't have to have a sexual acting out problem or a sex addiction to have the experience of being pretty isolated and in some ways lonely emotionally, because that's a lot of how males' life can be. So how does that change?
Yeah. I also think about the advent of the internet and, you know, when you and I grew up, if you were going to seek out pornography, you had to, you know, you had to find it under someone's bed or dug in a hole in some woods or something like that. And now, you know, kids are growing up with these images right in their phones. And I wonder what role that is playing in this problem as you see it.
Yeah. Well, there's probably not enough time to speak to all of that, but what we could say is that the internet internet porn and being on a computer has sort of been referred to as the cocaine of pornography. The crack cocaine of pornography, right? It's like it really is. I mean, it's a mood altering process that is unending. So in the old days, somebody could look at a magazine over the course of 15 or 20 minutes, but literally with the computer, somebody can be on the computer all night and look at hundreds of images, and it never ends. So the mood altering is enormous.
Right.
And so a lot of the men that have come here and are in treatment began looking at pornography when they were 11, 12, 13 years old, which is when we parallel alcohol studies.
Right.
We know that when kids under the age of 15 are doing binge drinking, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, not sips of wine at a bar mitzvah, but we're talking the binge drinking, that they are four times more likely to develop a serious problem with alcohol than somebody who waits to start drinking until they're 20 or 21. That's likely about brain development. And so when we have young men, 11, 12, 13 years old, consuming all this porn and having all this mood-altering imagery going on in their undeveloped brains, it stands to reason that the vulnerability to develop an addiction earlier on is right there. And then not to mention all the how the legal system has not caught up with the technology. And what do you do with right. sexting and with all the different things that can happen with use of technology? Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that they came up with a new called PIED, a porn-induced erectile dysfunction, because they're seeing these young men
right.
who are raised in pornography since they were 9, 10, 12 years old, and then they get into an intimate relationship and now are practicing intimate sexuality, and they're wondering why they're having erectile dysfunction issues,
right.
and it's because the brain has been marinating in pornography, and they haven't connected it into another human being, and so then they're going to the doctor for help, you know, to get all that mechanics to work, but really it's more of a psychological, emotional, intimacy problem.
Yeah.
And that needs to be treated. So,
yeah.
So I'm just wondering if there's anything about your experience in group or, you know, stories or times where you've seen men make, you know, progress in ways that really it's been inspirational for you to give you this passion of providing treatment for men in groups that you would like to share.
Well, it really is an ongoing powerful experience for me to see how men are able to support each other and really be compassionate and give to others that which they're not so easily able to give to themselves, which is sort of like, you know, let yourself off the hook here. You messed up. You need to learn to accept yourself. The whole notion of, well, how in the world do I forgive myself for everything I've done, for these things that have happened, and I have so much shame about that. So the kind of the group process of recognizing that you alone can work on this, you alone can show up and be honest about your life, you alone can really reveal everything you need to reveal, but you can't do this work right. alone, and you can't forgive yourself alone, so we need each other
yeah.
to forgive and accept ourselves. I need you to forgive and accept me, and you need me to do the same
right.
for you. So it really is a lot of this is a transforming an identity that's based on independence to more of an interdependence
right.
and a sense of myself that's not just based on being with an intimate partner, but a sense that I have. I have a little bit of a group here. I have, and that not just here at Men's Resource Center, but I began to develop a sense of community in my life.
And you're not talking like cheap grace where people are just like, oh, you're okay. And people are enabling each other to continue to act out. And,
right.
and so there's rigorous accountability to
right.
say, you know, you're not going to get well, you're not going to find happiness, and you're not going to get connections to other human beings with this ongoing acting out. So there is that accountability piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not, we don't get to a forgiveness place when we're not dealing with the consequences and the reality of what we're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you have someone who's listening and, as we kind of wind down here and who's just suffering in silence and just like can't imagine, you know, being involved and doesn't think maybe they can, you know, take that step or they could do it alone. I mean, you have any words of encouragement for this person that maybe is just hesitant to take that first step of asking for help?
Well, I think one place is to, is just be open to educating myself a little bit about, listening to a podcast like this, reading
right.
something, reading some articles, talking to a few friends, even casually about, you know, just trying to get more curious about, well, is this something that is a problem for me? So if I've got a concern about something medically, I don't need to know everything about it or commit to some form of therapy
right.
to go to a doctor and say, hey, I've got some questions, you know? So we do that quite a bit, actually.
Or like a consultation.
You somebody can just kind of call up and say, hey, I just want to come in and and kind of kick some things around about this. And and we get this, you know, it's like...
But they're not committing to group by coming in here. They can just talk to you on the
little
phone session. They can come in, talk, or whatever, and then you kind of come to a plan together.
Yeah, get more information, and and maybe you discover that it's not as much of an issue as you thought it was, or maybe you discover that this is something that I want to address, and we can look at about how we do it, because somebody doesn't have to be in a group.
Right.
We've had guys who want to work on this without being in a group.
Right.
And so we can do that as well.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us today, Al. Appreciate your insights.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Revealing Men. If you're looking for more information about counseling, coaching, and consultative services, please visit the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan online at menscenter.org. Also, feel free to contact us on our website if you have any questions about this segment, ideas for a topic, or would like to be a guest on the Revealing Men podcast. Be well and have a great day.